Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to Kernels. I'm Christopher Hooton, culture editor here at The Independent, or just Game of Thrones man, it feels like my title should be lately, given how all-consuming this show is becoming. Like, I think pretty much anyone who uses the internet even rarely probably knows how big the show is and how talked about it is, but in the world of film and TV journalism, oh boy, it is enormous. It's probably big. It probably becomes bigger for content providers than the Oscars or the Super Bowl. You know, there's just this huge, huge appetite for it among readers. We have these big screens up in the office that kind of show you, you know, what stories are most people reading right now. And Game of Thrones is just always up there, like several articles. It's crazy. People just want to read. They want to theorize about it. They want to know what's coming up. It's really quite incredible. It's more popular than any show I think has come before. Obviously, part of that's how much the internet's become embedded in the conversation now, which probably wasn't the case with some, you know, with shows a long time ago. But even with something like Breaking Bad, it was never this big. So it's been a lot of my time recently, you know, which I don't begrudge. I like the show. I don't love it. I enjoy covering it. I enjoy my Sunday night graveyard shifts, my watch. I'll probably be a little bit sad, actually, when it's gone in 3 weeks' time, as it's a shorter season than usual. But yeah, crazy couple of weeks. But around that kind of huge mainstream topic, I've been fitting in a few films. One actually I saw a little while ago now, but it's finally getting a release this week, is A Ghost Story, which I interviewed director David Lowery for, and I wasn't originally going to use for Kernels, but kind of listening back to our conversation, I felt that it was right and that we got down to some interesting stuff, not only in terms of how the production was put together, but the kind of philosophical underpinnings to it as well. So as far as juxtapositions go for two films done back to back, they don't get much more bizarre than this. So David directed Pete's Dragon, a Disney animation, you know, millions of dollars aimed at kids, all that kind of thing. And then off the back of that, he made this film, A Ghost Story, which is micro budget, funded literally just by him and his friends. Didn't really tell anyone he was making it. Kind of text Rooney Mara and Casey Affleck, I'm like, do you want to be in it? And they were like, yeah. So they just went to this little house in the middle of nowhere and made this crazy film. And it first came to my attention, I think it first showed at Sundance, and I noticed that Variety had written a piece about it, talking about how it wasn't a straightforward horror movie, and it was, if anything, more of a conceptual experiment that would be better suited to a museum setting. And they also mentioned that Casey Affleck acts from beneath a bedsheet pretty much the entire movie, and that there's one scene in which Rooney Mara slowly eats a piece of pie for 4 minutes in silence. I was immediately like, huh, okay. Whenever I see something like that, it's like, I always want to see it, you know. It could be terrible, but I know it's going to interest me. Something's there. Someone's tried to do something there. They've had like an out there idea, and they've committed it to film, and they're hoping that it's going to amount to an impactful viewing experience. So I always try and get along to films like that. And it is an interesting film. I mean, in spite of the name A Ghost Story, and if you've seen any of the posters around town of a ghost, you know, it's not remotely a horror. And the synopsis for it is as follows. In this singular exploration of legacy, love, loss, and the enormity of existence, a recently deceased white-sheeted ghost returns to his suburban home to try to reconnect with his bereft wife. So it's definitely more of a drama, but as the Variety piece noted, more like an art film, really. It's not a huge amount of dialogue, and it's just a real oddity. It was shot in 1:33:1 aspect ratio, which is kind of almost square, really, and then the square has the edges rounded, so it's kind of like a bit like viewing the whole thing through an old VHS camcorder. And it's just quite gutsy in how it takes its time and how it has a lot of shots that go on, you know, well past a minute without cutting. And that takes a lot of confidence to do that and not be tempted to, you know, to need to switch it up to keep people's attention. It also has one of the main things that stood out to me is a kiss in it that I swear to God, is the most intimate moment I've seen in a long time in film. Even though there's no sex, no nudity whatsoever, you basically kind of voyeuristically witness Rooney Mara and Casey Affleck, who play the couple, kind of getting into bed and kissing in a way where it's like, okay, is this like a good night, I'm going to sleep kiss, or is this like we're going to have sex kiss? And this is something me and David talk about, and it's like acted brilliantly. Like, they've done it absolutely perfectly and kind of nailed that in a way. Nailed's maybe a wrong choice of words here, but that I've not seen in a film before. So scenes like that made me think there's an intelligent guy behind this, an emotional guy. So I caught up with him. And as I say, I didn't think it was going to be for the podcast, so I didn't go with the most high-spec equipment. I recorded it on my iPhone, so apologies about that. And also for the fact that in the room where we were in this hotel, some other guys in the room decided to deconstruct a kind of filming setup that was in the room. So for the entirety of our conversation, there's little noises in the background that just sounds like someone's like making a kid's diorama or erecting a nativity set. Hopefully it won't be too distracting, but it's just forewarning anyway. And also in terms of forewarnings, like, this isn't obviously really the kind of film with a lot of spoilers, you know? It's not all about the action and the plot as such, but there's not twists, but there is kind of big moments towards the ending, and one of them we discussed right at the end of the interview. So I've stuck a little bit of elevator muzak just before his answer for like 10 seconds in case you want to end things there and maybe return to it after you've had a chance to see the film, which for a very, very small budget, bizarre piece of cinema, I'm glad to say is going to make it to a few cinemas, I think. So have a look online and see if it's shown anywhere near you. All right, thanks. Hope you enjoy, and see you in another couple of weeks when I think we'll have, well, bar some enormous entertainment act of God that we have to address, we'll have Ethan Hawke on the show. Cool, so this is David Lowry.
Yeah, so congrats on the film. I saw it a couple of days ago.
Thank you.
Yeah, I really liked it. I was thinking while I was watching it how, like, it was kind of ballsy on your part, because in so many, like, creative things, whether it's music or film, there's always so much pressure to make things, like, shorter. Everyone's like, yeah, that's great, but can we make it more concise?
Yeah.
You really stuck to your guns in terms of being like, this is going to be a 3-minute shot.
I mean, a lot of those shots were written into the script with the running times attached to them, so that everyone would know going into it that was the shape this movie would take.
Yeah. And yeah, what did the... I was thinking about that with the screenplay, like, obviously it must have been really short.
Yeah, it was at its longest probably like 35 pages, but that included a lot of like alternate scenes that I just had written down just in case we might want to shoot them. So
yeah,
the first draft was 10 pages, the second draft was 30, and it never got too far beyond that.
Did that make it like more difficult to sell the idea to, you know, to cast into everyone really when there's not so much for them to draw on, only kind of what you've got on a scant kind of few pages?
No, because the benefit of making this movie the way we made it was that it was designed to be made with just friends, with people who I would not have to explain it to.
Yeah.
And luckily, Casey and Rooney trust me, and I know that Rooney read the script because we talked about it, and whether or not Casey ever did, I have no idea. I have a feeling he may not have. I texted him and asked him if he wanted to come be in a weird movie, and he said sure, and then he came. And I mean, I know he eventually read it because he had dialogue and stuff, but
yeah.
But I don't know at what point in the process. I know that he said yes before he read it.
Yeah, I don't know at what point he realized he'd be like under a sheet for.
I think I included that in a text message, but I don't know if he really believed it until he got there.
Yeah,
until we started sending him pictures of the costume.
Was it like important for you that he be under the sheet and not ever be a double, that he actually be there in every scene?
It was initially, but it became less so as the shoot went on. And there are certain scenes that we knew going into it where there was, you know, going to be a shot of him with the ghost in the same shot, and
yeah,
that'd be somebody else. And we realized that I needed that the ghost worked best when the personality was subtracted from it. That if you saw too much of the human underneath the ghost costume, it ceased to be ethereal and became merely a person with a sheet draped over their head.
Yeah.
And so early on, his performance was coming through the sheet quite predominantly. It was very noticeable. It was noticeably him under the
sheet.
It's
interesting, because you'd think that would be a positive.
Yeah, I thought it would be. That's what I was going for. But the ghost just wasn't working. And then we realized that removing the personality from the ghost made the ghost work. And so ultimately we had to do some reshoots and some pickups later on down the line, and he wasn't under the sheet for those, but yeah. It was fine because we had already reached that point where we realized that the performance mattered less than just the shape of the ghost in the room.
Yeah. I was really taken with the scene quite early on where after they wake up in the night and then get back in bed and, like, they're kissing.
Yeah.
And it, like, even though there's no sex in it, it seems so unbelievably intimate.
Yes.
Because it, like, it's on the boundary between, like, kind of a sleepy kiss but also a little bit sexual at the same time.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The way it was described in the screenplay, which was all the direction I gave to them, was they begin to make out, the type of making out that could lead to sex, but in this case leads to them just falling asleep.
Yeah.
And that's I was just like, just do that. And
yeah.
And that's what they did. And watching it was, it felt like we were watching something we shouldn't have been seeing.
Absolutely,
on set,
yeah.
Because it was so intimate. And they have such great chemistry that you just really believe it. And they didn't really fall asleep, but, you know, we kept shooting after they had drifted off to sleep, and we kept letting the cameras roll, and it was just like, it was so hypnotic to watch.
Yeah.
And I knew right then, like, I was like, okay, that's going to be the whole takes going in the movie.
Yeah. Rooney's so good at that kind of role. Like, I saw Song to Song recently.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
One. It's a similar kind of vibe. She's good at, like, doing this kind of wistful romance.
Yes, exactly,
kind of,
yeah.
And what was it? I think there were very few people who would have gone from a film like Pete's Dragon to a film like this. How did that, like, happen? And was your agent and everyone kind of like, oh, okay?
We didn't tell anyone we were making this movie. My agent knew it a certain... Right before we started shooting, he became aware of it. But we just wanted to make it in secret so that no one would be expecting it. Part of the reason was a safety measure, so in case the movie was a failure or in case it was just too goofy...
Yeah.
We could bury it and no one would be worried about it. But going from Pete's Dragon to this was not a calculated move. It was just, it felt right. It felt like this was a movie that I wanted to make, and I had the time to make it after a long time spent focusing on Pete's Dragon. And so I just jumped into it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't really differentiate between large and small scale films. I mean, they all demand different things, but at the end of the day, the process is exactly the same. And if it's something that I can get personally invested in, it's, you know, that's all that matters to me. And this was something that I was incredibly personally invested in. It was not there was no one asking for this movie other than myself. So it was just something I wanted to put out into the world. And so I just decided to go ahead and do it. But
yeah. But
to me, like, it's just as much of a, you know, I'm just as proud of this film, as Pete's Dragon, as I am of this film. Like, I don't differentiate between them based on one being a studio movie and one being independent. This one's not any less, more or less personal than that one, but it definitely is more handmade, and that's something that does appeal to me.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Must have been a nice, like, vibe on set then, if it was kind of secret and just friends doing, almost like calling in a favor, and it was just, it must seem quite, like, low-key.
It was. There wasn't a lot of pressure because we had a lot of freedom to experiment and to try things out. And, you know, my friends and I paid for the movie ourselves, and we, you know, again, made it without telling anybody. So there was no one knew what we were doing. You know, word got out that we were making something, but a lot of people thought we were just making a short film or just shooting something for fun. And there was absolutely no pressure to deliver something or to have a movie that was that looked a certain way or that felt a certain way or there was a certain running time. It was just the freedom was really wonderful, and at the same time, the movie itself was really hard to make. It was not an easy film to shoot, and there was a lot of stress involved in it. And so, if thankfully we had that freedom, because like every day I would, you know, wake up just wondering if the movie was going to work, if the ghost was going to be a disaster or not. I just didn't know.
You must remember, you're like, why the fuck did I choose a ghost?
Literally. I was like, this is a stupid idea. Yeah. Why is no one pulled the plug? And the reason was because I was the only one that could pull the plug, and I just kept doing it.
Yeah.
And so it was stressful, but at the same time, it was very exciting and fun and liberating, and it was. It was, you know, I kind of had the idea that I'd make this film as a summer vacation, and it was the most stressful vacation imaginable, but at the same time, it was exactly what I needed to do after making Peace Dragon.
Yeah. Do you get kind of more anxious about whether or not it's going to come together because of the fact that it's the kind of film that comes together in the edit so much that you need the music there, and actually on set, is it more difficult to kind of think, I've got a film here, it's going to work? Or?
You know, this one was particularly unique, and it was all because of that ghost. You know, I can pretty quickly ascertain whether or not something is working or whether I'll be able to find it in edit suite or if it's working on set. You know, I've got a pretty good eye for that type of thing, and I know how to, you know, work within my comfort zone in almost every regard. But this ghost took me out of that comfort zone every single day because it was just such a high concept idea.
Yeah.
And when dealing with such a high concept idea, you're always running the risk of failure. And I just couldn't tell if it would work or not. It was just so hard to look at the ghost in front of us on set, or look at it through the camera and through the lens, and determine whether or not it would hold up for an entire film, an entire running time.
Yeah.
Now, anything with Casey and Rooney was fine. Like the scene of them in bed together, I knew that that was a scene that I would want to go see in a movie. I was like, great, we've got that. All the scenes of her by herself, I was 100% on board and knew that those would work. But as soon as that ghost would enter, I just wouldn't be able to tell if it could hold up. Like, 'cause he needed to work for the entire running time of the film, for the film to work, and I couldn't tell. So it wasn't until we were, you know, well into production, I started to assemble things together, and that I kind of got a little bit of relief from that and started to see how he would function in the movie as a whole, as opposed to on a scene-by-scene basis. And once I realized that he was working, and once we figured out how to shoot him the best way, you know, like, once we realized that removing that performance from underneath the sheet helped sell the concept, I began to breathe a little easier.
Yeah. So I was thinking while watching it that you never, when you have, like, a ghost in a film, you never really think about them and the fact that they're usually tragic characters who are haunting because they've had some terrible calamity in their life, and that was kind of an interesting area to explore.
It's always from the perspective of the humans who are being haunted, which is why most haunted house movies are scary, because it is a kind of creepy concept. But as soon as you switch perspectives and start paying attention to the story from the point of view of the ghost, it gets an entirely new dimension. If you think about like The Conjuring 2, for example, which I loved. I thought that was a terrific movie. If you thought about that from the perspective of the ghost, it's pretty depressing and sad, and probably has a lot of boredom in it. So So I kind of wanted to attack the haunted house genre from that perspective and see what it yielded.
Yeah. It's interesting as well, like when the family moves into the home, it seems particularly sad, and it kind of reminded me of like when you move out of your childhood home or something, and then you drive back past the, like, down the road, and you see like a family eating and dinner in there. And even though it's all above board, it feels almost like disrespectful in a way. Like they're in my house, you still have.
They're trespassing. Yeah, absolutely. I do that. I, like, just the other night, I drove past my old house in Texas, and it just felt strange to see a different car in the driveway. I haven't lived there in over 2 years now, and it was still very disconcerting to see someone else having made my home their home.
Yeah.
And those feelings are a big part of what led to making this film. I wanted to make a movie about physical spaces and the attachment that we have to them and how they become so personal to us, because that's something I find in my own life. I'm a very nostalgic person, I'm very sentimental, and I get really attached to the homes I live in. Mm. And I've never lived in anyone aside from the one I grew up in with my parents for that long, so I've got a whole laundry list of houses and apartments that I have very strong feelings towards.
Yeah, I read in a production notes that the idea came about, right, from you kind of wanting to maybe leave your house though, and your wife like wanting to stay in Texas.
It was vice versa. She wanted to leave, I wanted to stay.
Yeah.
And
who won that?
She did. I mean, we had to leave anyway because I was going to go do Pete's Dragon, and we were trying to decide whether we'd keep the house and she would stay and I'd travel back and forth, or whether we'd just all move. And we ultimately all moved. And but then we moved back, so we both won.
Yeah.
But yeah, it came about. We had a big argument over it, and it was one of those arguments that in the moment I remember saying, this feels like a scene from a movie. And so I wrote it down, and all of Casey and Rennie's dialogue pretty much comes from that.
Yeah. With the pie scene that's like become like the big headline, like from
it. Yes.
How many takes did you have to do, and how did like Rooney feel about it, and like how did it all go down?
It was
intense to like, because you know,
yeah,
there was not even any cheating because there were so few cuts, so she really had to smash a lot.
There's one cut, and the first shot we did two takes of, but in that shot she only takes like two bites, and then we cut. And then the second one where she ate the whole thing was just one take, and we knew it would be one take.
Did you like go out of your way to get a delicious pie so it'd make it nicer?
She told me before we shot it that she had never had pie in her life before.
Really?
I don't believe her, but maybe it's true. Either way, she was very nervous about it because she doesn't eat a lot of sweets, doesn't eat sugar. She's vegan, so am I, so that's fine. And so I had one of my friends, my producer, who's also a chef, he made a vegan pie that was gluten-free and had very, very little sugar in it. And she still said it was disgusting, but I tasted it and I was like, it's pretty good. I would eat it. I love pie though, so it's
it's pretty good. You didn't have to eat like 75%
of it. Exactly. I know she was nervous about doing it just because she wasn't anticipating enjoying it. She like doesn't like eating sweets, so that would be the problem. But in terms of like bringing out the emotional quality of the scene, I think that discomfort actually made that scene even better because she wasn't supposed to be enjoying it. She's grief eating, and so that just made it a little bit more believable.
Yeah. Thinking about like the kind of the philosophy behind the movie a little bit more, like the whole idea of like motivation in the face of futility.
Yes.
Something like, I definitely like struggle with a lot, and from time to time I kind of get into the space where I'm kind of thinking like, why am I really doing this?
You know? Yeah.
Okay, so it does really well. I'm really pleased with it. It's really acclaimed. People enjoy it. It means something to them. That still ultimately all doesn't mean
it doesn't mean anything. Yeah.
Yeah. And how do you like? Do you get those? Do you have those worries as well? Or have you managed to kind of overcome that?
This movie was my way of trying to deal with it. I get, you know, those thoughts keep me up at night. I get very stressed out about them. I get depressed about them. I'll get like I get to the point where I don't want to get out of bed, and I think they're pretty universal. I mean, to some degree or another, I'm sure everyone has contemplated their place in the universe and the meaninglessness, the meaningless aspect of human life, that when you think about, you know, the grand scheme of things, that nothing really matters that much. If you believe in the afterlife, then maybe it matters a little bit more, but if you don't, then you got absolutely nothing in the grand scheme of things. And that makes it for a certain type of person, that can make it really hard to get up in the morning. And sometimes I'm that person. So this movie was a way for me to not address those problems, but just to recognize them and kind of lay out my thoughts on it and give myself some time to make sense of it.
Yeah.
A big part of the film is just spending time doing nothing, so you have time to actually think and come to terms with things. So like, you know, the character in the movie maybe never comes to terms with his fate in the universe, but by spending that time with them, it allows us to contemplate it and maybe get a better grasp on our own feelings on that matter.
I was thinking as well that you kind of need to approach it and not think about too much about having made something, and actually just the fact that you can enjoy the moment, like presumably when you're on set and making that, and when you're out there, that's a lot of joy happening there.
Yeah, the process. You're focusing on the process. I mean, it's a very, you know, almost cliched Zen concept of like enjoying the moment.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And that, but it's true. I think that, you know, it's a cliche because it's true, and it is something that I try to be mindful of. I try to be more focused. I try to be more present in my day-to-day life on a moment-to-moment basis, because ultimately that's what we've got.
Yeah.
And I want to make the most of it.
Just like finally, and I won't use this quote until people have had a chance to like really watch the movie, but the note at the end.
Yeah.
Did you ever think about what it says?
I thought a lot about what it would say. Rooney wrote down something on the paper, and I was like, just write whatever you want. You know, we won't see it. It's the camera's too far away. And she, I have an idea of what she wrote. But then when we shot the ghost opening it and reading it, we shot it blank. And then we were like, okay, we will digitally add something later on so we can decide exactly what it's going to say later. And then when I was cutting it, I just realized it didn't matter. Like, there was nothing that we could put on there that would be meaningful enough to an audience to justify its inclusion.
It would be too on the nose.
It'd either be on the nose or it'd be too abstract.
Yeah.
And it would just be a bad note to end the movie on, literally.
Yeah.
And so we just left it out. And I had ideas of what I'd put on it, and none of them matter because it's better to just not know.
Yeah.
And ultimately, it doesn't matter to him either. It's like it's more about the process of just finding it and recognizing that it doesn't matter and then moving on.
That's what I was I was wondering, is like what is it about the note that makes that frees him from that kind of loop? Is it just the fact that something has been placed that has no...
It's realizing that sentimental attachment doesn't matter, because whatever she's leaving behind is pure sentimentality.
Mm.
It's not a note for him. It's not a note for anybody other than for her to leave behind and feel attached to a place. So it's 100% a sentimental affectation. And those things ultimately aren't that important. I'm a very nostalgic person. I'm a very sentimental person. And I recognize that those things can hold me back. And that letting go of those things, letting go of my nostalgic attachment to the places or things of my youth that I feel attached to can help me move on in life. Like, those are things that like are sometimes important to let go of. And so that's what is happening at the end of this film, is Casey's character is realizing that it doesn't matter. And once he comes to that realization, he can move on to whatever the next plane of existence is, whatever that may be, and the movie's over.
Thanks a lot, man.
Thank you.
Yeah. And what are you working on next? Do you know yet?
I don't know. This is the first time in a long time where I don't have a project right, or like I'm ready to jump into. I just finished shooting another movie, and so I'm editing that. And other than that, I'm just going to spend some time writing and trying to come up with some new ideas, and we'll see what happens.
Cool. Oh, well, good luck with everything.
Thank you.
Enjoy the
Really appreciate it.
Right, that was David Lowry, director of A Ghost Story. I hope you enjoyed that. I felt like we got down to some deeper kind of shit there, which is hard when you go into a room with a stranger and you have no time for kind of slowly getting to know someone. You just got to go straight in, and you suddenly find yourself talking about the shit that keeps you up at night and makes you sad. But I think we got there, which was nice. And yeah, if you make it to A Ghost Story this week, let us know what you make of the film. We're on Twitter at Kernels and on Instagram at Kernels Podcast. And if you get a chance to rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast, you know, that's massively, massively helpful. I know that sounds like a thing that just like you're meant to say, but it genuinely does help us get this out to more people. So it would be great. And we love to hear from you. You know, I'm on Twitter at Christoph Hooten, not Christopher, just purely because I couldn't fit in the ER, not because I have some kind of French lineage. And yeah, any questions or any suggestions are more than welcome. So yeah, hit us up. All right, thanks again, and I'll see you in another couple of weeks.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And UnitedHealthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.